The views expressed by other entities in this podcast episode do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Sarah Tran and Meghajaya or represent the technology brand. Some may find the remarks and opinions expressed to be inflammatory or offensive. For these reasons, listener discretion is advised.
Hi, my name is Sarah Tran.
And this is Meghajaya.
And we
are technology.
I need to go to rehab. That's how much I use TikTok.
It's a great way just to like turn off my brain until it goes numb. And then I'm like, oh, now I'm ready to go to sleep.
Anymore. I'd say I used to use TikTok. I think now TikTok uses me.
And it's not the same as TikTok because like nothing will be.
So even, you know, the video that went viral with me and my green shoes, that wasn't originally a TikTok.
Seeing it as a foreign threat and only a foreign threat is what creates this whole negativity behind it.
I completely think that that makes it a national security threat.
So what you guys just heard is a montage of the hottest takes about TikTok from a lot of the interviews that Sarah and I have conducted in the past few weeks.
And so as you've probably noticed by now, this episode is about TikTok. There's going to be a lot that we're about to spill about the app and about the general trends and media around TikTok. And we're here to break it down for you guys to spill some tea.
You know what's really funny?
What?
I have TikTok music stuck in my head right now, like as we record this podcast episode. And for the listeners who don't know this about us, both Sarah and I actually do not have TikTok. We've never downloaded the app. So I think the fact that I have TikTok music stuck in my head, and I know that I'm not the only one, is testament to the fact that TikTok has just pervaded mainstream media to the point where it's inescapable.
Isn't it so funny how, like, as a music creator, you know you've made it when your song gets blasted across TikTok and then to the point that people who don't even have TikTok are getting that music stuck in their head, and then we associate it with TikTok. Just crazy.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's like so many creators out there at this point who we would have literally never heard of had it not been for TikTok specifically. So I guess thank you TikTok for all this catchy music. But yeah, I mean, let's get right into it.
So what even is TikTok? Well, I'm sure most of us are already aware of it, but just to establish some of that background information, that's really important to know because it frames a lot of this conversation that you're about to be hearing. So the first thing is that TikTok was launched in 2016 by the Chinese developer ByteDance, and it was later rolled out in 2017 to markets outside of China and has since become quite pervasive at the moment. And that's exactly why, you know, we have music stuck in our heads and we have dances fixated into our bodies at this point.
Yeah, there's this entire culture surrounding TikTok, aptly named TikTok culture. And it's not just on TikTok, it's also on other platforms because the app allows for cross-platform sharing. Basically, TikTok is a video sharing platform in and of itself. And it's kind of like Vine, except for the fact that it has a lot more editing tools, from what we understand. And you can mix a lot of really cool audio together, create original tracks for your videos. And you also have an entire minute to create a video rather than just 6 seconds, which is what Vine users used to have. But yeah, we decided to interview the people and really bring this entire episode to the masses because eventually that is what TikTok is about. It has brought together so many different people from different age groups and backgrounds across the world. So we thought that we would get their perspectives on it.
The coolest thing about this episode is that I feel like no matter who you talk to, everyone has something to say about it. So I'm just really excited to get into this episode.
For sure. So we ended up interviewing 10 people, two of them being industry professionals, specifically one who is a high school teacher teaching global politics and pursuing a PhD in education. and the other professional being a chief investment officer at an investment, specifically a data-related investment fund. So these were great sources, but we also wanted to hear more about TikTok from the user perspective, more specifically the avid user's perspective. So of course, we brought in our Gen Z friends and we interviewed 8 of them, most of them being high schoolers and incoming college freshmen.
All right, so today we're joined with Spencer Wolf. So yeah, for those of you listening in who may or may not have already seen the TikTok in which Spencer Wolf or Mr. Wolf was a part of that ultimately went viral, for some context, it was created by the account Joey and Steven on TikTok. And what happened is the content creator walks by Mr. Wolf, who's wearing this notorious pair of green shoes, and roasts him by saying, "Wow, those are some really ugly shoes," right after complimenting him to his face. So I remember it evoked a lot of different emotions and responses from our community. So it was just really interesting to see that and to be able to speak to him today about those experiences.
So we actually go way back. He was actually my English and global politics teacher. So he's been teaching me for 3 years. And today he's going to be joining us to teach all of you guys about his experience with TikTok. But I guess to start us off, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. So my first question is, what was it like to go viral on TikTok?
So I think the guy that posted it, if he is monetizing that, which it seems like some kind of comedy prank account, you know, I think he owes me a little bit of his paycheck or whatever he got for that.
Fair point.
Oh, especially if you look at the comments, and I had to download TikTok in order to be able to see them, but it seems like quite a lot of Granada students spreading that around and leaping to the defense of me and my green shoes. So, yeah, he's got that to account for his virality or his going viral.
So that clip was actually really interesting, because we learned that the TikTok in which Spencer Wolf or Mr. Wolf had been included in was actually a Vine that was recorded 10 years ago. So that was all the way in 2010. And so we went to our other expert, Prince Bajwani, the CIO of Greywall and co-founder of Asana Voices, to ask him for his take on what makes TikTok so different.
So I think TikTok's done a few things really, really well. Infinite scroll and snackable content creates an unparalleled amount of engagement on the platform. Now, if you add that to the fact that they've made it really easy to cross-post TikTok's content onto other platforms, you know, you're getting TikTok to tap into other social graphs without having to do that portion of the legwork. And then, you know, secondly, I think customizable content that empowers users to get more creative and engage with others on the platform in a way that hasn't been done on, other major social media platforms. I think there are pockets of great content on TikTok, especially in the comedy space. But when it comes to a lot of the top content creators and influencers, it feels like the focus is on virality and not originality.
So Prince brought up a really great point about the idea of originality versus virality. And so what we did is we turned back to Mr. Wolf and we asked him, is there some sort of a secret sauce that goes into becoming viral on TikTok? Was it originality? Was it community? Was it something else? And so now you're going to hear his take from his own experience going viral.
You know, it was embedded within a community, I think, more generally. And I think that's what makes social media spread effectively. Enough people had a common point of reference when they saw that to where it was a meme. It was an inside joke. People could share it amongst themselves and feel a little bit of something. Whereas if it was just a random guy making fun of another random guy's shoes, where's the virality in that?
The next opinions you'll hear are from Sam, a freshman at UC Berkeley, and Sargis, a junior in high school.
Like, I posted videos, I'm like, wow, this is a really good video, I think. But then I post it, it flops, and then like I post like a bad video and it gets like 1,000 likes. And I'm like, I don't really know what's going on here.
What is it like to go viral? I mean, you just casually got viral 5 times. I would love to find some insight on that.
It's weird. So like my like most viral video is like, I think like 700,000 views.
One of my videos went viral, I guess. But in a, the funny thing about TikTok, it's designed in a way that any video can go viral. And the fact that one of your videos goes viral and everyone's video will potentially go viral.
I think the top Minecraft one was like 363,000.
So yeah, she's TikTok famous, y'all. Okay. But yeah, so like, do you find TikTok addicting? And like, how many followers do you have, if you care about that sort of stuff?
Yeah, 4,500 followers, I think.
The next thing that we really wanted to get at the bottom of with our interviewees was whether they actually enjoyed TikTok or not.
These next views are expressed by Kaylin, who is a freshman at UC Berkeley, Betty, who is a senior at USC, and Christiana, who is a freshman at UC Santa Cruz. So as a whole, how do you feel about TikTok as an app? Do you like it? Do you dislike it?
Everyone else is there, so why aren't you? Like social pressure, I'd say, which kind of made it, you know, just skyrocket a lot more. And it's kind of like a snowball effect.
You see all the, let's be real, the cringy, dancing, weird gyrating thing, right? Like, just that's not dancing, in my opinion. And so I downloaded it, not really like expecting much, but just to check it out. And I, when I tell you it's addicting, it's like, cause it's just a constant stream of content, and your For You page, it's so catered to you. Like the algorithm is like, it's pretty spot on. It knows, like, it, depending on how you react or like what you search or what you look at, it will like recommend you videos. And then like, you just fall down that hole for hours. It's a great way just to like turn off my brain until it goes numb. And then I'm like, oh, now I'm ready to go to sleep.
I used to like 8 hours a day, but then I realized it was like really toxic.
I was kind of on the early bandwagon actually, before the platform got really popular. It's not a platform that I use regularly at all.
It's very toxic. And it like erases people's identities and like sexualities. And like TikTok's main thing is being empowering and accepting, but it really does the exact opposite.
I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily TikTok's intention to promote, you know, monoethnic content.
Is it something that the algorithm is attuned to, or do you think it's just because of, you know, the way that TikTok, I mean, that's a really open-ended question. If you have any input on that.
TikTok has Singularity really focused on paring down the people and the content that it curates to cater to a specific viewpoint. The algorithm is doing it either way. And I think the responsibility falls on the creator of the algorithm to make sure that it's, you know, doing its job, and doing so in a humane and just way.
Next, we asked our interviewees about the ways that TikTok may be collecting, storing, and ultimately repurposing users' data. So you may be a little surprised to hear about some of these shocking stories.
This is Alexis Sosa, a freshman at Cal Poly Pomona.
Have you ever noticed that like you were talking about something or texting someone, whether like through TikTok or not through TikTok, and then like something of that same topic popped up on your, you know, For You page or something like that?
Yeah, I've noticed, like, I watch a lot of Criminal Minds, and as soon as I told my friend, hey, you should watch Criminal Minds, I started getting Criminal Minds TikTok pages on my For You page.
Did someone else we talked to say the same thing about Glee?
Yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so interesting. We're noticing a pattern, I guess.
I've been watching Glee a lot lately, and before, like, I deleted it, a whole bunch of Glee stuff would show up on my For You page, and it's like, the government's listening.
Funny thing is, that happens to me a lot with Instagram, but not TikTok.
If I was doing, like, a web search or looking at certain things and liking posts on Instagram, then I would see similar like things pop up on my TikTok.
The conversation eventually began to shift as people were talking more about the broader implications to individual data and user privacy. So now you're going to hear a variety of different takes on whether or not TikTok should be a legitimate national security concern for the US.
So like for me personally, it's just a medium of fun. It's not really anything more than like anything political or like even like some tool to organize the masses or like a content creation platform to make money. It's none of that for me.
If you're using Facebook, more of your information gets sold than if you're using TikTok. And it's like, if TikTok's a national threat or a national security threat, then why is Facebook still there and being used?
To say, I would just go with Instagram Reels, primarily because of security concerns. I'd also rather be supporting a company that has at least some sort of federal oversight and is responsible to the government and to us in the end. Versus TikTok really is responsible to its investors mainly.
People should know what to post and what not to, because there has been so much news out there about what information it gets. But I think that's more on the user to post what they feel is like safe.
And lastly, we have Isha, a freshman at Cal Poly Pomona.
With President Trump considering banning it, I think that's more of a testament to how he only sees foreign threats and not really any problems of our own. Only paying attention to foreign threats is like really a threat in the slightest, and not addressing US problems that have been specifically given attention in the media is wrong. It's more of like, because it's like a foreign threat in quotation marks from the Chinese government, that's why Americans don't want to trust it.
So these are my opinions. Yes, absolutely. For a few reasons. But first, I think what would be really key to understand is that national security can range from terrorism to economic espionage to perception management of the US government. And a lot of people, you know, they usually think that national security is more about, you know, they equate it to personal security. I think at a high level, I think TikTok, you know, as you know, it's owned by ByteDance, which has to comply with CCP censorship and data laws. A good deal of TikTok's users are highly engaged young Americans who can be swayed by malicious activity by a foreign agency. You know, we've seen this in the past with those, you know, those pro-democracy posts that were being actively removed during the Hong Kong protests. Second, you know, I think TikTok's mobile applications have just notoriously been designed without cybersecurity in mind. And you know, just by looking at it and reading a lot of stuff on my end, is most definitely spyware. You know, insecure web requests that were made on behalf of the device, sending key authentication information to the servers that obviously CCP has a look into. You know, they weren't even using industry-grade encryption. And that on top of the fact that iOS recently confirmed that, you know, TikTok is actively logging keys even when you're not using the app, just makes me, you know, feel really uncomfortable that this app is, you know, the user base has been, you know, primarily the next voter base or the next people that are going to be making decisions for the U.S. And I completely think that that makes it a national security threat.
No more so than any other social media app. I mean, I know it showed up in the news. President Trump signed an executive order, or he wants to sign an executive order, I forget where we're at with that, where he wants to ban it because there's a potential for the Chinese government to be data mining it. But I mean, Facebook's done that. Instagram's done that through Facebook. I don't think we can assume that any kind of private data really is private on any social media app. And like we saw in the 2016 election, you know, through Facebook, we had Cambridge Analytica monetizing and weaponizing people's Facebook profiles in order to influence an election. So even in an American-owned social media company, there's still that danger. Sarah could probably point out some of the things we talked about previously in global politics, how in the 21st century, it's less the case that the major actors on the world stage lie within particular borders. There's a lot more transnational spread. So, you know, a corporation can do damage across borders. Doesn't matter where it's housed.
Sarah and I also asked our interviewees how they might feel about TikTok possibly being acquired by Microsoft in the United States, Australia, and Canada. And these were some of the responses that we got.
Like, I don't really know how to feel about Microsoft buying it, because I know they had a streaming platform called Mixer for a while. Like, Ninja was on there for a second. I heard it's not doing too well because, again, like, Twitch is a pretty well-established streaming gaming platform. So to me, like, thinking, like, I think they might have a better chance with TikTok because there is already an established audience on TikTok. There's already, like, 100 million users. I don't know. There's a lot of people on it. So I think if anything, just like the changing of hands would not really affect the audience base unless like Microsoft completely changes the app itself.
Looking back in history, when Microsoft acquired Skype or when it acquired other companies that had, it's allowed them to relatively like do their own thing and just be under Microsoft. So hopefully they wouldn't change the platform too much. But it wouldn't change my perspective on either TikTok or Microsoft.
TikTok is a very unique platform. I mean, Vine went completely kaput. No one acquired them, even though they had a massive user base. So I'm surprised that Microsoft even offered, mainly. But in terms of what I'm expecting that to change, either the culture and perception of Microsoft or the culture of TikTok itself, I think Microsoft's image isn't really going to change much. I mean, they own tons and tons of products. TikTok will just be another one of their acquisitions. And besides investors, I'm sure the majority of people using the platform probably won't even notice. I mean, there might be an email sent out saying, hey, all your data is being moved to Microsoft now. But besides that, I'm sure there's not going to be much turnover.
So Betty, Sargis, and Kaylin, respectively, seem to be in agreement about what Microsoft's acquisition of TikTok could mean for the future of both of these companies. And they seem to say that there wouldn't be much of a change. But on Kaylin's note of, you know, data kind of switching hands from ByteDance to Microsoft or from TikTok to Microsoft, there were some interviewees who did have concerns with that specifically.
I think my biggest concern is that when bigger corporations want to buy like a lot of these smaller corporations, is there's always that fear where, oh, now a lot of original content or content that was there isn't going to be there because they want to make it more ad friendly and et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, this goes back to the whole conversation with, you know, how YouTube really changed as well. You know, they wanted to attract more companies to, you know, put their ads on videos, and you know, they're really striking down videos that they think are, inappropriate for audiences. And so there's always that fear, but I think currently there really isn't too much to worry about.
Here's what our global politics teacher, Mr. Wolf, had to say about the Microsoft acquisition.
They, as a company, have been pretty reliant on Windows kind of being the default business office app. I don't know how much them acquiring TikTok or any kind of social media would change their core model. But it's the nature of corporate entities and corporations in general just to kind of grow and acquire.
He also gave some historical context.
In the 90s, they were the subject of some antitrust laws. They had to be broken up initially. But it seems like we've gone through an era of increased deregulation since then, so maybe they're just trying to recover some of their lost bulk.
We then asked our guest expert, Prince, whether he believed that this acquisition could bring any major changes to Microsoft or the TikTok app's interface.
That's an interesting question because, you know, if you look at Microsoft from the past, that's what they've done. You know, they pretty much ruined Skype. But under Satya Nadella's leadership, I wouldn't say so. I think most acquisitions under him, especially the big ones, have remained somewhat independent, you know, from Microsoft's ecosystem. But they still find a way to integrate that and fuel Microsoft's growth. I think GitHub is a huge example of this. You know, GitHub is the largest repository of developer data. And while Microsoft is certainly leveraging that, you know, it's in sales channels, it really designed the acquisition from the ground up to make sure GitHub can remain as independent as possible. And I think that's going to be really similar if they're actually going to move forward with TikTok.
I think Prince brings up a really interesting point in that Microsoft really has changed with its leadership. Satya Nadella didn't make the same mistakes that were made with Skype and LinkedIn, GitHub, Minecraft. All of these amazing products and services that were acquired were kind of allowed to retain their brand, which was just really powerful. But I think that the other concerns that we've seen from other interviewees are also valid, because TikTok is not LinkedIn, it's not GitHub, and it's not Minecraft. It's a very unique app, and it's facing really unique challenges. With the US government trying to ban it currently with the data privacy concerns, we could possibly see a change in what the app looks like just because of the way data is now being processed on the app, or that the way that it's being stored. And that could potentially be a good thing, because it would mean that you know, you were safer if you were a user on the app. So that's a possible change that could come, and I guess it's understandable that some people are afraid of that change.
Yeah, and that actually brings up two questions that I was really thinking about while listening to all these interview segments. And the first part was, you know, as users, it's about asking how much data are we willing to give up so that ultimately these apps and these platforms can better learn our own tendencies and learn what we as consumers want. So that's the first question, right? So like, where do we draw that line? And the second question is like, how, like, can you really ever have full data privacy, right? Because we talk about it being so important, but I feel like the second that you're in the online community, it's almost, it's virtually, no pun intended, impossible to, you know, make sure that all of your data is fully safeguarded. So those are definitely two questions that we'll have moving forward.
I think you bring up a really valid point there, Sarah. I remember reading an article a few years ago that was about a guy who took like a burner phone and nothing else, and he just removed himself from his online presence completely and went to this random state, and he basically challenged all his followers to try to find him. And the way he had set up this entire experiment, it seemed like it would be almost impossible to find him. But he was found within 48 hours, I believe. So that is just a testament to the fact that you are leaving data and these digital footprints everywhere, regardless of how safe you think you're being. You may not ever be safe. So with that kind of dark and slightly ominous note, I mean, obviously there's also advantages to the internet and advantages to social media. There's so many people you meet and you're able to connect with that you wouldn't have before, especially during COVID-19. I mean, that's happening more and more. And, you know, we discuss all of these topics, data privacy, COVID-19, antitrust laws, in our last episode as well, which was Silicon Empire episode 2. So if you guys have any more questions about that, go ahead and check it out. But with that, I think we're going to just end with this final note from Mr. Wolf.
Part of it is right now we're all just starved for stuff to entertain us, right? I don't know about you, but my standards for what I watch on Netflix or whatever, they've plummeted. I just want stuff.
Thank you, Mr. Wolf, for those wise words. So as you guys know, we've also started posting content regularly on Thursdays. Last week, it was our Technol3s for that week. But this week, since there was just so much we couldn't get to in these interviews, we're going to be adding some extra parts from the interviews we conducted that were just really juicy bits, where people were spilling some really good tea about some of Microsoft's competitors in this acquisition.
So make sure to tune in this Thursday to spill some tea with us.